The spotlight is on bank bonuses.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the morning open, a look at the economy as trading gets started for the day. American markets now open, and we get to ask that question, where's Wall Street? And the numbers are up right now. The S&P up about 0.8%. Same for the NASDAQ, and the Dow higher now by 93 points at 10,430. Shares are higher across the board in Europe about 1% or more, and Asian markets were mixed today. Looks like governments on both sides of the Atlantic are moving to enact tough curbs on executive pay for bankers. There's word today the French President Nicolas Sarkozy will follow Britain's lead and impose a one-off tax on bonus payouts by banks operating in France. We're talking about 50% on bonuses above $40,000. Now, the UK came down with that 50% tax yesterday. Richard DeKayser is president of Woodley Park Research. He's with us live right now from Washington, D.C. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
So I read this op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal. Sarkozy and the British Prime Minister Gordon Brown are trying to make the case for this to be a global effort. What's the rationale with that?
Well, regulators on both sides of the Atlantic want to harmonize regulation because they recognize the basic principle that regulation in one place can simply chase business off to another place. And if Europe is especially harsh in one area, that'll shift business over to American institutions. So they want to try and level the playing field. But now the hard part comes in, and that's agreeing on the terms. What they're doing in Europe is a relatively blunt instrument. It applies to all employees throughout the financial services sector, whether they had a hand in bad deeds in the past or not. In this country, we're trying to be a little bit more surgical. So we've got this pay czar, and he's directly managing the pay of companies covered by the TARP program, and the Federal Reserve's getting into the act.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least proposing to.
Could we ever see something like that, Richard, in this country, 50% tax on bank bonuses?
I don't think it's likely. And again, I think they're going to want to try and push for alternatives that are much more precise in targeting individuals and firms who benefited most from these bailouts rather than an across-the-board kind of an effort.
And we're going to see what they debate in the House today, sweeping changes to financial regulations. Executive pay, just one item, but there's the issue of greater transparency in the derivatives market, new protocols to deal with troubled firms to avoid another Lehman-type collapse. I mean, what do you think Congress is going to settle on?
Well, clearly they want more transparency because derivative contracts have been one of the problems we encountered in the financial meltdown of last year. They tend to be very specialized, very customized, and very opaque. We don't understand many of them, and that's why investors, when they turned off to derivatives, fled en masse. So the efforts here are to create an exchange where they'll be traded and reported, and firms will have to put some money aside in case of loss.
All right. Richard DeKayser from Washington. Richard, thanks.
My pleasure.
As we know, the executive pay issue is one of the sticking points for banks that receive government bailout money. Reports are this morning Citigroup could announce as soon as today that it'll pay back a chunk of loans from the so-called TARP. Ashley Milne-Tight is with us live this morning from our bureau in New York City. Good morning, Ashley.
Good morning.
So what's motivating them?
Well, Citigroup's the last of the big Wall Street banks that hasn't paid back its government bailout money. I mean, you know, Bank of America paid back their TARP funds just yesterday. And Citi really doesn't want to be the standout for long. They want to pay back those funds mainly because they don't have to kind of chafe under government rules on what they can pay their people. And I spoke to banking consultant Bert Ely earlier, and he says Citi's really feeling the pressure because we're so close to the end of the year.
Citi needs to move on this very quickly if it's going to raise additional capital by the end of the year, because as we get into the holiday season, then capital raising efforts of the magnitude that Citi is talking about simply don't become possible.
Because, you know, the holidays take over, investors go away, and everything gets pushed into next year. And Citi would much rather go into 2010 having paid back its loans.
And how much money are we talking about here?
Well, they got $45 billion in bailout funds in total, but the government converted $25 billion of that into common stock. So we're talking about them paying back $20 billion. That's what they want to pay back. And they plan to raise all that money in the stock market.
All right. Ashley Milne-Tight with us from New York. Ashley, thanks.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, December 10th, 2009, at marketplace.org. It's day four at the UN Climate Change Summit in Copenhagen. Marketplace reporters Stephen Beard and Sam Eaton are there, and this morning our coverage continues with a look at the friction between the two biggest players, the United States and China, and the debate over how to control heat-trapping gases has touched off a back-and-forth concerning money. Let's bring in Marketplace's Stephen Beard now live from Copenhagen. Stephen, good morning.
Hello, Steve.
So what's the squabbling about?
Well, as you say, over money, and specifically the question how much the rich countries should pay the developing world, both to deal with the effects of climate change and to keep emissions of heat-trapping gases to a minimum. Now, US officials here say we're happy to pay to help poor countries, but we're not handing over cash to China. It may be a developing country under UN rules, but it's clearly not poor, and it's not getting its hands on any US taxpayers' dollars.
Now, what are the Chinese saying about all this, Stephen?
Well, they're maintaining sort of lofty disdain. I mean, they're saying, we're not seeking financial support from the US. We're just making a point. We're pressing for rich countries to accept their responsibility for climate change and to help the developing world deal with the consequences. This does, however, open up an old sore. China is by far the biggest recipient of Western financial aid under the so-called Clean Development Mechanism, where developing countries get financial help for projects that curb emissions. These have to be new projects, and China has reportedly been getting billions of dollars worth of help for projects that were going to happen anyway.
All right, Stephen Beard joining us from Copenhagen this morning. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Right around happy hour time in Washington today, an alcohol trade group will take the stage at the National Press Club. Now, industry leaders will be talking about how the alcohol industry is faring. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson has that.
Craig Wolf is president of the Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America. He says the economy may be recovering, but drinkers are still looking for deals.
The days of the $20 to $60 to $100 bottle of wine are fading very quickly.
He says hard alcohol is avoiding the trend somewhat because there's more brand loyalty with liquor. The other trade down is a move toward buying alcohol in stores instead of buying it at restaurants and bars, which is not to say that bars are emptying out altogether. I stopped into a Manhattan pub called Mustang Sally's. Manager Mike Kelly told me for his customers, it's all about the cheap drink specials these days.
For the ladies, we like to do a $5 Cosmo. And for the gentlemen, we do $4 Jamesons, just in case you need to get the edge off after your day's work. And we've noticed a great after-work trend and buzz in the place.
So you'll drink to that?
I will drink to that, Jeremy. Thank you.
In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Well, today, the government announces its monthly statement of receipts and outlays. That means how much money is coming in and going out. And it's expected to show that the government's collecting less and less from income taxes. From Washington, Brett Neely reports.
When you look at your pay stub, there are two kinds of taxes. There's income tax, think 1040s and April 15th. And there are payroll taxes, which fund Social Security and Medicare. Those are flat taxes of about 15% that employees and employers contribute equally to on the first $100,000 or so of income. Payroll taxes have long netted the government much less than income taxes, but not this year, says Len Berman at Syracuse University.
It's primarily an artifact of the recession and the big income tax cuts that were enacted as part of the economic stimulus package.
Lost jobs and the sinking housing market have caused income tax revenues to fall $300 billion, while the payroll tax has chugged along. But Berman says once the economy recovers, the income tax should start collecting more money again. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
Let's face it, the standard corporate holiday party is part schmooze fest, part loosening up with coworkers, and part getting something for free. But fewer companies are having the seasonal get-togethers. Some of it's cost, some of it because they want to do something else. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler explains.
At companies across the country, human resource professionals like Mary Crick have been weighing this question.
Given the economy and what folks were going through, did it really feel right to spend money on a party?
Crick works for PECO, the largest utility in Pennsylvania. Normally, the company holds a gala sometime between Thanksgiving and Christmas. But with such high unemployment among its customers,
the decision was it didn't feel right, but we did have the money in the budget and everyone wanted to do something.
PECO set aside a day for employees to volunteer with local charities. Crick says turnout was better than expected.
We actually had more volunteers than there were slots available for.
She said the company decided to donate more than time.
We took the money that we would normally spend on the gala and donated it to each of those organizations.
In all, PICO is giving about $65,000 to local charities. Other companies are also rethinking holiday festivities. Mark Hutchins is with the international auditing firm KPMG.
For the last 20-plus years, we've done a holiday party sometime in December.
In this economic climate, Hutchins says a party seemed out of place.
And so we decided to do something a little bit different that still brought our people together and was more giving back to the community.
On a recent Friday at KPMG offices across the country, employees assembled teddy bears for disadvantaged kids. The final gift package included a children's book. I asked Hutchins how much his Los Angeles office spent to have 700 employees stuff teddy bears.
Oh, I'm sure it's in excess of $20,000, but that's way less than a holiday party would have been.
Few employees complained that the Grinch stole their holiday party, though one person said she enjoyed volunteering but wouldn't mind having the holiday party, too. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
The Labor Department today says first-time jobless claims rose last week by 17,000. They say the higher number is partly inflated because of the Thanksgiving holiday when many state offices were closed. We also learned the number of home foreclosures in November fell by 8%. That's four in a row, according to the firm Realty Track. But foreclosures aren't the only indicators of how the battered housing market's doing. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
It's not just Realty Track. Real estate sites Zillow and Trulia say homes are holding their value better than they did last year. Alan Jin is an economics professor at the University of San Diego, and he says these are all signs the market's finally settling down.
We are seeing some firming in terms of the housing market. Prices are edging up in some metropolitan areas, for example, here in San Diego.
He says people are buying homes again because interest rates are low and the prices are cheap. And people are trying to take advantage of the tax credit for first-time buyers. That tax credit was just extended until next spring. Heather Fernandez is with the website Trulia. She says the extension could send a lot more inventory onto the market.
As existing homeowners and as banks holding foreclosures want to take advantage of this tax credit and the incentive that buyers have to jump in the market.
But she worries about what'll happen when the tax credit expires. And she says there could be a new wave of foreclosures among prime borrowers this time. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Finally, party favor business owner Terrence Watanabe lost some serious cash in Las Vegas in 2007. The Journal reports it at $127 million. He paid most of it, but Harrah's and Rio Casinos say he still owes them $14 million. And now Watanabe is challenging them, saying they gave him painkillers and drank a lot of booze, but let him gamble anyway. That's against the law. So is not paying your debt to the casinos, which have, by the way, denied Watanabe's claims. Naturally, lawyers are involved. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.